Welcome back, everybody, to the Trade Readers Podcast, the comic book club, where we read a different trade paperback every single week, and we come on here and we review it.
And then
in the same week.
And the books that we read, the creators also listen to that episode, apparently, sometimes.
And that's always pretty crazy, because where do they find the time?
And that makes me feel nice.
Yes.
Yes. Last week, we read The Silver Coin by Michael Walsh and a bunch of other people, and Michael Walsh listened to it, and he commented on the little tweet, and he was like, good stuff.
He said we made him laugh a couple times.
Yep, and I have no idea why. We're not even that funny.
I listened back to it, and there's some good ones. I think he probably laughed at like the Chef Boyardee joke.
Yeah, I think that was a good one. That's the only one I remember. And then the eye worms, but that's...
Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to Michael Walsh. That was very nice of him. And I tried to get him on, but he denied me. But that's okay.
Maybe some other time.
Yeah.
Once no, we get... just means no right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, maybe... I'm Daniel, your brother... You're Nathan. We're brothers. We read comics.
Yep, absolutely.
Don't want to forget that.
Uh-huh. But if this is your first time listening in, or if you're Michael Walsh listening again...
welcome back.
Well, welcome back. We have time codes for all the different segments, including the comic book news that we have for the week. We talk about different things that are happening in the comic book world. The book that we will be reading this week, which is Gideon Falls. The back matter for said book, or the pull list, where we talk about the different things that we've been consuming outside of comics and the comics that we read for that week. Because we're not true trade waiters, are we?
No, I was thinking about that. I'm like, damn, because like when you pick up a single issue and it's like $6, I'm like, damn, I could just wait for the trade and the whole thing would be like maybe $20.
You know what I mean?
Because I hadn't picked up stuff for a couple weeks. I was just saying what I was going to get.
Yeah.
And I picked up Maze Book 2, and it seemed thin. Still had that $5.99 price on it. I'm like, ugh.
Ooh, I still haven't picked that one up, but yeah. I do want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. The books are starting to get up there, man.
I know.
The paper's nice? I guess.
It's still just as flimsy and fragile as it has been.
But sometimes it's glossier, you know?
Like, maybe. Anyway. Let's get into the news, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it. So this is the news. This is where we talk about the news.
Indeed.
So what news do we have?
Nathan, Anakin Skywalker will be in the Ahsoka Tano Disney Plus show.
The actor?
The actor, Anakin Skywalker, yes.
Who do you think he's going to play?
He's going to be playing Hayden Christensen.
Oh, wow.
He's going to be talking about how much he hates Star Wars and how he can't go outside anymore.
He doesn't hate Star Wars.
Well, yeah, I don't think anyone really hates the... Well, they do, but they don't say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I saw him, like, go to Disneyland, to Star Wars Land, and, like, do the whole, like, lightsaber shit. He just looks so tired.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if people stopped him or if he's just real tired because he's a dad.
Yeah.
But
seems
still.
Real tired. This isn't necessarily news, but I just thought it was something that you should know.
Okay.
I just saw this tweet, and it just said, another day, another chance to tell people that Morrison and Quitely commonly referred to All-Star Superman as Ass Man on official pages and correspondence. So when they would refer to their work, All-Star Superman, they would abbreviate it as A-S-S Man.
That's so funny.
Yeah, and I'm just like, that sounds like very much like them. So I like that a lot.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, we've read Ass Man on the show, one of our first episodes.
If
very
someone's
good.
Like, what's your favorite comic book? Oh, Ass Man, for sure.
Yeah, definitely, you know, Ass Man. Sorry, that's lingo for All-Star Superman. I don't know.
Yeah, you would not. Oh, so remember last week we were talking about the Kelly Thompson issue and how the slasher, like, stabbed that one girl, like, in the back of the head and came out of her mouth?
Yeah, and I've never seen that before.
Right. I hadn't either. But I watched Supernatural season 11. And
shut up, did that happen?
Yeah, angels, there's these angels, they're real mad at each other. They have these like knives that can kill angels and demons. And one got stabbed in the back of the neck and it went out his mouth. I'm like, oh, I need to write this down,
dude. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was really
just
cool.
Talking about it. It's not a common way to kill somebody.
No it is. Wow. Cool though.
It is very cool.
In other Supernatural news, not really news,
because that's what we are, we talk about Supernatural all the time.
I was watching it, and there's a character that was reading Death by Neil Gaiman.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, shit. And then Lucifer was in that same episode, and he's talking about how he's going to stop the big bad guy or whatever.
That's good.
And then the main character's like, what are you going to do after that? He's like, I don't know, move to L.A., solve crimes. Like,
referencing
the actual Lucifer show, and I fucking died.
That's hilarious, actually.
And Sarah was like, what? I'm like, he's like referencing the show that he's referencing has nothing to do with this Lucifer. It was just so fucking funny.
That's a cool little nod.
There's so many references in that show. Like, I only get like 80% of them, but there's like a ton. Like, they reference old movies and stuff like that. It's, yeah, so that was really funny.
Can you move your mic a little bit closer? Just a smidge.
In other news,
there is going to be a Batman Catwoman annual or special, and that's going to publish the late, great John Paul Leone's final work that he was working on before his unfortunate passing.
Damn.
It's also going to include Mitch Gerads as well to finish with like the rest of it. Mm-hmm. So that'll be his last published work.
Damn. Isn't it like a Christmas special?
Yeah. Yep. So that's going to be a Christmas special.
Gotcha. I'll have to get that for sure.
Yeah. Written by Tom King. Dave Stewart's on it as well.
Awesome. So, yeah. Nathan.
Yes.
Brendan Fraser is coming to the DC Cinematic Universe. He's going to be playing Firefly in Batgirl.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I don't know.
There'll be two things in DC Comics.
Technically, yeah. I think like the TV universe is definitely different.
Definitely. But yeah. I guess I don't really see it that much. But
maybe it'll just be like a voice thing. Like Robot Man.
I think so.
So I thought that was cool. I just like seeing him being cast in things.
Yeah, I like him.
I like hearing his voice.
I like him doing work.
Indeed.
Good for him. Bill Murray's going to be in Ant-Man 3.
Yeah, I heard that. Unknown character.
Yeah. Who do you think?
Ant-Man.
So many famous Ant-Man characters out there.
He's going to be Galactus.
Dude, I'm just kidding. Yeah, we should just theorize that every new actor casted in the MCU is just going to be Galactus. And then we'll eventually be right.
So they had Lawrence Fishburne as like Giant Man, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe it'd be some other, you know, older retired superhero that's within that, you know?
What if it's a future Scott Lang?
You saying that Paul Rudd turns into Bill Murray?
Yes.
I don't know.
I could see that. Just based off this picture. It shows the two of them and I'm like, okay, maybe.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
It's possible. But like, I feel like you don't do that when it's someone that like you just looks age so up. Close.
Yeah, true.
Or like, it's someone that is like a face like Bill Murray.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'd have to really like really guesstimate with that.
Yeah.
Because I don't really know. I've never read an Ant-Man comic except for the one we did on here.
Yeah, and that was great.
Great book.
So yeah, that's cool. And I guess Bill Murray, you know, he's not a huge like comic book movie fan, but he knows the director from something else.
Okay.
So that's why he signed on for the project. So, you know, he really wants to do it.
Cool. Yeah. I like when those like big actors just kind of get like a little part in it.
Yeah.
Because why not?
Peter Milligan and Michael Allred.
Oh my God, it's my turn.
Are coming out with The Excellent, which is an X-Men book coming out this February. And this book was originally announced before House of X, Jonathan Hickman thing. And it was in the back of giant-sized Ecstatics that was published in July of 2019 and just said coming next year. I read that book. It's pretty cool. It references like Allred's previous work on X-Men from like a while ago. So not a whole lot of it. There's not a whole lot of it that I understood completely.
Okay.
But at the time, it was supposed to be like a 10-part like maxi series, and now that's finally continuing. So that's pretty cool.
Nice.
I don't know what happened to delay it, but it's coming back, and it's coming in February.
Probably all the Hickman stuff.
Maybe.
They just wanted to like make a new X-Men kind of universe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the case.
That's cool. I love Mike Allred on things.
I love Mike Allred, but of the things that I like of Mike Allred, do you see a little green guy in there?
Oh my God, is that Gloob or whatever?
We get a little bit of Dupe coming in. And on top of that, looks like there's an evil version of Dupe coming in.
His name is Swoop or something like that.
Pood. Just the reverse. Yeah, so always love to see Michael Allred doing stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. Speaking of characters or creators we like doing things, Garth Ennis is going to be on a new Peacemaker series.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah, I think it's coming out next year, probably closer to the show. But yeah, I just saw it in the solicitations.
That makes so much sense.
I was like, oh, this would be
cool. That's basically just DC Punisher. It feels like, essentially.
So I thought that was neat.
So that's good.
There was a poster revealed with Miss Marvel. I don't know if you saw that.
I did not.
And her powers are like different.
Yeah, so I did hear about that.
She had like a hand and it had like, it looked like she had like a bigger like ghost hand or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like her hand didn't like stretch and become like a big fist.
Right.
And so how do you feel about that, Nathan?
Sure. I'm sure that they would have gone with stretchy Miss Marvel if it either made sense visually or if they wanted to save that for Mr. Fantastic. But either way, it kind of looks like a Green Lantern thing almost, right?
Yeah, but like it actually looks like a ghost hand kind of thing. Like it's white.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, whatever works, I'm sure it's for the best. Or if it's a budgetary thing, I kind of prefer source material.
Yeah, I would like to see a big fist or see her grow really tall with very stretchy legs or whatever.
Yeah, but she takes big steps.
Takes real big steps. Maybe step up onto a building.
Yeah, very big strides.
Give somebody a big slap, But
yeah,
I guess I'll just have to see it in motion. But yeah, it'll probably be fine.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting. That's all the news I got.
There's just a little tidbit of a funny thing, I guess. Well, not funny.
Love it.
But
not funny.
It's funny that it happened, I guess, but it shouldn't be this way. Okay. I'll just explain. Marvel came out with a video game this week called Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, it's out?
It is out this week. And I haven't played it yet. I plan on playing it this week. But there's different costumes that you can get, and it tells you a little bit about the costume, and then it tells you where it first appeared. And there's a costume on there that originates from the Chip Zdarsky, Chris Anka run of Star-Lord.
Oh, yes.
During the Grounded miniseries. And they said that it first appeared in All New Guardians of the Galaxy number 1 in 2017 by Jerry Duggan and Aaron Cooter. So they got it wrong, which sucks. But the official Guardians of the Galaxy account commented on that picture because Chris Anka posted it and was excuse me. And then they're sorry about that. We're going to fix it. So but it's cool that they have the different costumes and where it's going to where it was first appeared. And it shows that you
can change them too. That's really cool.
It says first appeared in All New Guardians of the Galaxy number 1. And then it'll show the writer, the artist, the cover artist, and the editors. Sick. As well. So
wait, so if you have Drax, can he have different scars and stuff?
I think so.
That's sick.
I don't know. I haven't played the game, but this one's just called Social Lord instead of Star-Lord. That's just what they've called that costume.
Okay.
And it looks different from the typical Star-Lord that we know.
I love the power of Twitter.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah,
because Gamora's got some really sick outfits.
Yeah. She's definitely going to be the most interesting one to see how they change stuff.
For sure. I like how she had this solo series a couple years ago. And I just thought she looked so fucking cool in that. And so if I was able to get that, that'd be what I'd set her as,
She's got a ton of interesting uniforms. I think Groot will have some interesting ones too if you can change his look.
Yeah,
because Scotty Young did a Groot series.
I don't know if it'll look like Scotty Young's drawings
but
or anything.
It's spiky and stuff. He's more spiky than I feel typically. So yeah. Sure. I'm excited to play the game. But that's all the news I have.
Alrighty, then what are we doing next, Nathan?
Next we're gonna get into the little book that we read this week. It's a little bit of a spooky book, capping out our spooky month of horror books, and it's called Gideon Falls.
Indeed.
By Jeff Lemire, Andrea Sorrentino, and Dave Stewart. Lettering by Steve Wands and edited by Will Dennis. So yeah, Image book from the incredible minds of Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino, and this book is pretty kick-ass.
Definitely.
So you've read all of it?
No.
You have all of it?
Actually, I forgot. I was looking for it because I was planning on finishing it. I'm around 20 right now.
Okay.
So only 7 issues left.
Just recently wrapped up with issue 27.
I think it finished in December 2020, and I don't have issue 27. I looked for it everywhere, and then I just checked my little app that keeps track of all the books that I have, and I never scanned it, meaning I never got it. So what the fuck? I'm kind of praying that I still have it, that the shop still has it, because I feel like they overorder stuff, so it's possible that almost a year later they just still have the last issue of this.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But you're not a real fan is what you're saying.
Basically. But now that I've reread it and started to remember a lot of these things, then I'd be damn, I should just wrap this up.
Yeah. I fell off the book because I felt with the month-to-month format, I couldn't remember a lot of the characters and what their deal was. And I think that this book is an incredible trade read.
Absolutely.
Just because you see, especially if you shotgun it all in one go like I did this week for this book, you see a lot more of the really interesting details that they put in to the book.
And you remember the characters and stuff like that.
Yeah, and this is definitely Sorrentino doing the work of his fucking life in this book.
It's so good.
He went balls to the wall insane.
Absolutely.
So yeah, And he just came out with a Batman book that looks really good. I'm sure that's also Balls to the Wall Insane. I have it, but I haven't read it yet.
I remember writing it down. I wrote Batman the Imposter, like a question mark. And I can't remember why I put the question mark, but I didn't get it. But
because you're like,
now that I remember,
because you were wondering who's the imposter. Who's impostering?
What was the premise on that?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Andrea Sorrentino on Batman. That's the premise. True. Pick it up.
Good enough. Good enough.
Yeah, that's all I need.
Is he writing?
No, just doing the art.
Okay.
Mattson Tomlin is writing.
Do we know him for anything?
Nah, I don't.
It sounds familiar though.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway,
so we're gonna just jump into this. So, issue one. So we get introduced to Norton, the main character in the story, who's...
He's digging some trash. He's looking for something.
He's like a rough, kind of like homeless-looking dude almost. And he's just like obsessed with collecting trash and just like displaying it and documenting like the trash that he collects in his house.
Is that all the trash? Like he looks for these little wood chips.
Well, we find out that he looks for specific things, but we know at first it's just like trash.
It's not like he's got like cans in his apartment or anything like that.
But we find out later it's mainly like pieces of wood and like nails that are specifically calling to him. So he picks it up, but everybody else sees it as trash.
He wears a mask even like before the pandemic.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. A little odd.
Yeah.
He knew something we didn't.
He's got like the good mask too. What is that one called?
It's like an acronym, I think, with some numbers in it.
Yeah. He's got the good one.
The real surgery ones.
Yeah. And Andrea like never ceases to amaze me with his creativity, just like on all accounts. And like this page where we like see his room, and it's like a 360 degree view of the room, but incredible. Like on like a flat, you know, surface obviously of the page.
So sick.
It's awesome, because at first you're like, this guy's got a curvy room, but no, it's not. You just like, he just drew it that way, and it's like completely 360 degrees. So like he just has like a fundamental understanding of like this guy's setting, and I think that's really impressive.
The double page spreads in this are bonkers.
Yeah,
I love them.
Literally,
so good.
Some of my favorite pages, like in comics, are in this book. There are some that like just blow my mind on just another level.
And like the panel layouts are insane.
Yeah, I was about to say, they always like, he always manages to like create art and just the way that the panels are shaped in itself, like they always like keep me interested, because I'm like, this is something I've never seen before, you
sometimes
know?
Like it happened when I was reading this, I was so like taken back and amazed by the panel layout that I like kept going and I forgot to like look at what was in the panels, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So you just like looked at the page
and then I was like, I'm like, oh, I think I missed something.
This is a pretty page.
Yeah
he's like just always doing something that's interesting and that I've never seen before. So I really love this dude.
Mm-hmm.
And so then there's another main character thrown into this, and his name is Father Fred. He's a pastor who's used to moving around different towns and stuff. And he comes to Gideon Falls after their previous pastor, Father Tom, dies. So when he gets there, he meets this person named Jean, and she helps him get settled in and stuff. But she doesn't want to talk about how Father Tom dies. Because they were really close or whatever. But it's also a little mysterious. Like, why doesn't she want to talk about it, you know?
Very painful.
Yeah. And I like just... You can tell that, like, at this point, they're two different worlds that we see. Because Norton and Father Fred are both in Gideon Falls.
Are they?
I would assume so. Isn't he?
There wasn't anything in this that made that clear. Hmm. It was clear that Father was in there.
Yeah. But maybe Norton's in, like, New York or something.
Yeah, that's kind of what I just assumed, but
maybe
because like, there's so many questions with this book, and you really don't know what's happening. Even where I'm at like issue 20, you mm-hmm. really don't know what's happening, kind of thing. But that's kind of what keeps you going.
But so that's what I kind of felt like when I was reading it month to month. But reading this trade, I think you get like a lot of context, like in this first trade. And I think that, and I've written it somewhere in my notes at some point, but they're really good at. Or Jeff Lemire is really good at leaving questions that are obvious. So, like, if you don't know what's going on, you know why you don't know what's going on, you know? Like, you know what the questions are, and you're excited to know what the answers are.
Right.
Rather than you're just, like, kind of going with the flow, and you hope that things make sense later. Like,
yeah.
You can still, like, easily follow the story, which I really appreciate in this.
Sure. Yeah, so it's, like, it's not really clear if, like, these two characters are in different time periods, or if they're... in different geographies
or
anything
like
that.
That's also a good point,
yeah. Cuz I thought when I was looking at like Father Fred, there's nothing like modern that makes it seem like it could be anywhere near modern day.
Yeah.
So I'm like, maybe this is like the 80s or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, you never see like a smartphone to make you think like, oh, this is at least past
She has a cell, like there's a character that has a cell phone. So I guess there's that. So it's, I guess it's close enough,
mm-hmm.
but there's just, a lot of things up in the air. Nothing like is really that clear. Nope.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But I think it's on purpose too.
Absolutely.
I think,
yeah.
I assume that these two characters will meet each other at some point, even though they don't in this trade.
Yeah, there is like a ton of scary imagery in this, and there are some really creepy things.
Yeah.
But mostly it's like kind of a mystery thriller, I would say, more than like...
Not really like a horror book, but there's scary things in here for sure.
There's a couple of jump scares, like those page turners.
That you're
like,
Jesus Christ. Oh, man. And then you got to slam the book shut real quick.
Look, pause it. Turn the lights.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. So Norton is in a therapy session with Dr. Zhu.
Yes.
And he's telling her that his obsession with trash has now kind of evolved, and there are pieces of trash that are like broken wood, nails, and et cetera, that are calling to him. And he's gotten better at documenting his findings and noticing patterns amongst the trash so that he can find good trash faster.
Yes.
Which I think is a funny idea. He's like, oh yeah, this is a good trash right here.
Mm-hmm.
But Dr. Zhu warns him against giving into this obsession, or else he will risk getting admitted back into like the psych ward that he was from.
Yeah.
But Norton can't stop, and he continues pursuing without Dr. Zhu's knowledge. And we get like the first sort of hint of some of the crazy visual storytelling of Sorrentino, but there's just like double page spreads that are just amazing to look at for like a few minutes on their own. And they kind of just demonstrate Norton either being crazy or dealing with something because he's not crazy, you know?
Yeah, it's just so him like thinking.
Yeah, just that first one of him thinking. But then also, I really like the scene where we see him try and fight against picking up trash, and then he turns around and like sees the nail on the ground, and just like the whole environment around him turns black and white except for the nail, which is like that aggressive red that he likes to use.
Mm-hmm.
Just really fun, like seeing the way that he uses that tactic.
Yeah, definitely.
It is awesome. So anyway, that night, Father Fred wakes up to what seems like the dead Father Tom that we thought was dead before, except he looks pretty scary. He's all red. He's got some wide eyes, you know.
No pupils or anything.
Yeah. And Father Tom takes Father Fred out into a cornfield where he sees a glimpse of this mysterious black barn. But then it disappears, and Father Fred finds Jean, the lady that was helping him out earlier, finds Jean's dead body on the ground. And we also know that Norton is seemingly collecting trash that makes up the black barn. So we know that Norton knows about it too.
What is this thing that she got stabbed with?
She has a hook for her hand.
Oh.
And her hook hand is what killed her. Like, she got stabbed by it. So someone took off her hook hand and killed her with it.
Brutal.
Which is, that's so rude.
Absolutely.
Just kill her with a knife.
Yeah.
That'd be a lot more humanizing, you know? But I really like this sequence where it's kind of leading up to showing Jean's dead body in like the big black barn. All of the scenes with Norton in it are like upside down, and all of the scenes with Father Fred are just like the normal right side up. So it kind of just tells you that like I don't know what it's explaining, but like I kind of get it at the same time. Like Norton's world is kind of like flipped upside down right now or whatever.
I think it's more like just to demonstrate that they're going to have both of these worlds in the same page,
yeah.
But don't want you to get mixed up in what each character is doing.
Yeah.
And then they're both like colored differently.
Yeah.
So that really helps like differentiate what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots of interesting things that they're doing here. But yeah, the big question at the end of this first one is, who killed Jean? That's a little bit weird. And what's this big black barn?
Mm-hmm.
And we see that Norton has like a picture drawing of the big black barn, and he's a pretty good artist.
Mm-hmm.
So issue two. Well, actually, before we go on, how sick are those Sorrentino covers of like each issue?
Oh, I love those. I tried to collect those specifically.
Yeah, me too.
Because I just liked them the most, because it's like
he like makes a face out of landscape, or just like
it's like an aerial view of like a map kind of, but it's actually like the satellite one, not like just like the
satellite map. Google Maps.
If you're and zooming. It's like it's in a shape of one of the characters' like heads or something.
Yeah.
And it's really cool.
Yeah, and he does it, like, consistently, like, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought the first one, I was like, okay, that's a cool cover. But I didn't realize that was going to be, like, the theme, like, going into it.
Yeah.
So, and he does that for all six issues of this first trade. So, that's pretty cool.
The number one that I have, the variant, is, like, Jeff Lemire, like, drawing Norton.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, and I then think, I started collecting the rest of them.
I think I have one of those, too, from Jeff Lemire. So Norton and Dr. Zhu are on a walk, and Norton wants to investigate some trash, but he doesn't want to tell Dr. Zhu why. He doesn't want to, like, pull her into the evilness, basically. But they make a deal to let him look through the trash if Norton says why he's looking, you know, for garbage in the first place. And even though he's hesitant to bring her into it, he tells her about the black barn and basically what that means. And then meanwhile, Dr. Fred reports the dead body to the police, as well as finding Father Tom. And the police are suspicious of Fred because he's a new pastor in town. He's like a new guy, and he has a history of drinking problems, apparently. But a deputy interrupts that whole questioning and with the finding of another dead body. And then Norton discovers that his apartment was broken into and part of his collection was taken. So that's weird. Someone mm-hmm. robs his house.
Very
and takes
odd.
Trash. So he goes back to Dr. Zhu, which interrupts like a whole other session, to tell her that someone doesn't want him to find the black barn. And Dr. Zhu is like disappointed and wants to put him back in like the hospital because she's like, this is weird behavior. But I really love this scene that builds up to Norton discovering the burglary in his house, because like the whole page is like flipped sideways of him like walking up to like his apartment door, and he like there's it like zooms in on like specific details, like you notice like the lock is broken and stuff like that, and then when he walks in, it's just like all trashed and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just interesting, like he just puts the sideways page there.
Yeah, because you know it's not like just a normal break in, because he didn't have anything of value.
Yeah,
and there is actual shit that he had that's like missing.
Mm-hmm.
Like the little wood chips and like a scalpel was missing.
Yeah, it's very specific.
Or tweezers or whatever. So, and then a couple nails.
And it's like it's frustrating because you're like, we know that Norton's not crazy, because who would break into a house and steal wood chips, you know?
And it like, took so long to get these little pieces, and he
and now
needs a
gone.
Lot more if he's trying to build a barn or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So we know that something's up, but it's just like frustrating, like as like the reader, to like see Norton try to explain it, but Dr. Zhu already thinks that he's kind of crazy. So it's like, I feel like you understood. Like,
yeah, it's kind of like a kid in like a scary movie. It's like, Mom, there's definitely some shit in my closet.
There's definitely a monster
like,
under the bed.
You're just dreaming. Shut the fuck up. Go to
yeah,
bed.
It's exactly that. And you're like, oh my God.
And then the kid gets murdered or
just,
whatever.
Just trust him for a second.
Like, yeah, just go look.
Roll with it. Yeah, exactly. So Father Fred uses his call at the police station to call some mysterious dude named Bishop.
He is a bishop.
Oh, he doesn't just call him Bishop.
Well, you know how you like call a priest father and stuff like that?
Oh,
you
okay.
call a bishop.
Gotcha. All right.
So he's just like his boss, basically.
Okay, so he calls the bishop with his one phone call, but he kind of gets no help. The bishop is like, you're where you need to be.
Yeah, he's like, did you murder the guy? And he's like, no. He's like, you have nothing to worry about.
Then you should be fine.
And then you sound Gucci to me.
And then one of the cops seems to know more than he's letting on, and like says that he believes Father Fred and kind of knows what he's going through in a way. And you're like, so what's this about?
Yeah, his name is Ballard. He tells him to go...
to go see the doc.
Go see Doc something.
Doc Sutton.
Doc Sutton.
And then the cops arrive at the scene of the new body that was found, and they find a fresh body of Father Tom, even though he was assumed dead 2 weeks before. So Father Tom is holding a nail in his hand, in his dead hand, and so you're like, that's weird, because Norton was collecting some nails, you know? Meanwhile, Dr. Zhu is trying to figure out what to do with Norton when she gets a vision of the black barn, and she sees a very spooky person that lives inside as well.
The spooky person is the most terrifying thing.
Too big of a smile.
That you can draw. Too big of a smile.
Normally, smiles are a good thing. If it's too big, though, I don't like it.
Too many teeth.
Not a big fan.
No one has that many teeth.
It's like a Titan from like Attack on Titan, but then like normal size.
Like the smiling one.
Like get those teeth out of here, you know?
Yeah, shit, dude.
But yeah, really, really like scary figure. Do you ever figure out like what that is? I assume it's like Father Tom or something.
I think you do. I can't remember.
Or maybe
though.
It's like Norton or like Father Fred.
I don't think it's like anyone in this.
Okay.
It's obviously.
It ends up being like a new character. It's not like a twist.
Yeah. It's like some big bad guy or something. Like, gotcha. I don't remember. Like, I would have to hopefully pick up the ones I haven't read and kind of piece together.
Yeah.
Or shotgun it all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Might be tricky. Yep. But anyway.
So.
I know this is like scary for her. But as soon as she saw the back barn, I was like, finally.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, thank God she understands.
Yeah.
You know,
you didn't like that, did you?
You don't just like randomly see black barns in the street. Like, she was walking down the street when she sees the black barn, and I'm like, okay, cool. Now she's going to be on the same page.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, what I love about Lemire's writing is that he can create a situation like where I have no idea what's going on like this, but it's easy to follow at the same time.
Yeah.
So like right now at this point, you're like, what is this black barn? Why was Dr. Tom alive? You know, all those things, but you know what's going on. So I appreciate it.
I think with issue 3, this is like my favorite cover with like Dr. Zhu as the maps.
Super like, cause it's just so good. Like you see the hair in like in the eyes and like the nose and everything, but it looks so natural. Like it looks like a normal like top down view of like a satellite map or whatever.
Yeah, it's dope.
It looks like he found this on Google Maps and just used that for reference.
And that's how he drew these characters.
Yeah. He just spent countless hours scrolling through Google Maps trying to find something that looks like a face, and then that's how he based the characters.
Right.
That's what I assume happened. So yeah, issue 3. So Father Fred is released from custody after the dead Father Tom had Jean's blood on his hands, which assumes Father Tom to be the killer. But Father Fred can't think of anything to say at the upcoming mass because this is like a tight-knit community and needs to like bring them together, right?
Yeah, there's like, been 2 murders in like a day,
and he's like, that's fucked up, and this mm-hmm. community needs somebody to, I don't know, give them answers or whatever,
right?
So yeah, it's been a horrible couple weeks for the town, and he eventually speaks from the heart at the mass with honesty, and he meets some mysterious people after the mass named Joe and Karen or something.
Janet,
and they're like, come over to the barn, or come over to my house at some point.
He's like, all right.
But they seem kind of weird. Like, there's a lot of sketchy people in this town, I feel like. Like, there's like the deputy.
So far.
Well, I mean, there's like the deputy at this point, and he's like, you need to talk to doctor. And you're like, what the fuck is that about?
He's the only one that was helping so far.
I know, but he was helping, but you're like, what do you know that you're not saying? And there's these people, and they're like, you need to come over to our house. And I really strongly suggest you come over to my house.
I think, like, some communities are like that, though.
Yeah, that's fair. But Norton is now super paranoid after his shit got broken into, so he sets up some deadly booby traps at his house to fend off the further intruders. Dr. Zhu ends up, you know, pulling up to tell him that she also saw the black barn and there's a dark figure inside with an awful smile. So Norton tries to convince her to help him solve the puzzle of like the trash together, but Dr. Zhu won't be a part of it and threatens to admit him to the hospital, still thinking it's some sort of like psychosis that they somehow both shared. But I love how Norton takes like Home Alone to like a whole other level with like his booby traps.
Oh yeah, this shit I would not even think of.
Like there's no sticky bandits coming into this house now.
No, they'd be murdered immediately.
They would. Like he sets up like a trap floor with shards of glass, like so that no one walks into his house. What if he forgets walking into his own house? He's just gonna fall into glass.
He just remembers like the spot, I guess.
And he like hooks up his door handle with car batteries so that it'll like stun them, or like he rigs like sticky explosive with like gum and like fertilizer and shit so that no one comes through the windows.
It's like, supposed to like blow off your fingers, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm like, God damn.
I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like maybe he is a little bit unhinged.
And then some sort of like acid thing that's on top of his collection. Yeah. So like if anyone tries to remove it, it'll just fucking burn them alive, I guess.
I feel like that one's not that good of a trap because I definitely, if I wanted to steal some sticks and nails from a crazy guy and I went over to a shelf and I saw a big jug that looked poisonous, I'd be like, maybe let's look at where the wire goes first.
Yeah, why is there a string on the top of this?
Yeah.
It looks concerning.
Guess it's nothing. And then, like, try and pick something up. But, yeah, I just, like, he's, like, so obsessed with it that he's willing to, like, kill people over this, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. But it's cool, like, how they demonstrate it, like, on the page. Like, how Andrew Sorrentino demonstrates it. And he, like, highlights certain things, like, on this double page spread.
And, like, blows it up.
Yeah, it's really cool. So, yeah, just shows you like how much he really knows the layout of this room. And then Father Fred finds newspapers about a mysterious barn disappearing, so he knows that there's, you know, some shit going on too. And he stumbles on a message to Father Tom coming from Dr. Sutton. So Father Tom goes to Sutton's address and finds the doctor has done a bunch of his own research on the black barn for years and tells Father that that he is now the newest recruit of the Holy War for Gideon Falls, basically.
Yeah, he's got this room that has like all these newspaper clippings.
Yeah.
That kind of connect to the barn.
It's like the typical like tinfoil hat kind of looking room where you got shit connecting to each other via red string.
I just think of like Charlie from It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, that's I always think of that now.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a room for that because they do this in like FBI shows and whatnot.
Yeah.
But
where you just like post newspaper clippings on the wall.
And yeah, this is connected to this. Yeah.
And then there's a couple pages where Sorrentino has panels that are basically like Venn diagrams. And that's something that I've never seen before.
Oh, yeah.
Like the main circle Venn diagram is one panel. And then where they overlap is another panel. And then like does that a couple times. And I was like, that's a really cool, you know, style visually.
Yeah, definitely.
So I like that a lot. But
most of these pages are something I've like never seen before.
Yeah.
And it's always super refreshing.
Yeah. It's definitely a book to look at for the pretty pictures.
Right.
But I also feel like this team is really good at making people seem crazy, but also super knowledgeable on the situation.
Yeah, I'm like, Doc, no, I trust this guy. This is important.
Yeah, like Doc Sutton looks fucking insane, but with the context of what Father Fred knows, I'm like, oh, thank God he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like he's got all these clippings on the wall. He must know something.
He's got so many answers to your questions.
Yeah, exactly. So issue 4, I also really like this cover too because it really covers like Dr. Sutton's like beard.
And it's just like trees.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome. But this issue is like a big explanation issue. There's like a lot of explaining that goes on to like the history of Gideon Falls and stuff.
Yeah.
But Dr. Sutton goes into the history of the Black Barn, like being mentioned and how far back it goes and how Dr. Sutton, Father Tom, that police deputy, Ballard is what it was.
Yeah.
And I think there's one more guy. They all formed a group called the Plowmen who were there to fight against the Black Barn. So he's been doing this for a while. And then Father Fred thinks that it's too much and he decides to leave, thinking it's all some sort of like crazy science fiction story, which, come on, dude. Like, you saw the Black Barn. Do you not believe this like a little bit?
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the things in this book. I'm like, you've seen this physically, like yourself. You've experienced it. You don't think this makes like a little bit of sense?
For me, I'm like, thank God someone already did all this research so I don't have to.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be like, oh, sick. Let me just hop on what you're doing.
Yeah, let me just copy off your paper and what do we do next?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, but Father Fred's like, this is crazy. And then Fred goes to the sheriff lady to talk about his visit with Doc Sutton. And she also thinks that all the Black Barn stuff is nonsense and a way to cope with reality. Which I can kind of get. Like, I guess you can form connections to things, like unexplained events.
It seemed like there's a lot of clippings about, like, the horrible things that happened in Gideon Falls that all connected to the barn.
There's definitely a lot of evidence. But I could see if it was, like, you know, 2 newspaper clippings, and you're like, isn't this weird?
But yeah.
He's got a whole fucking room of red lines.
Exactly, in this little town. Yeah. That's, like, all the news.
So, yeah, the sheriff is like, this is all, yeah, crazy shit. And then during their talk, the sheriff gets a call about shots fired and she needs Father Fred to drive because she was drinking. So there's the double page spread where Doc Sutton is like explaining the Plowmen. It's like really interesting because in the beginning or in like the middle, there's like a cross shaped panel.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. And I think that's really interesting. But I also want to give credit to the letterer who has to deal with all these insane Andrea Sorrentino pages.
Yeah. Because how are you like...
How do you see
Where do you put the thing?
You're like, I imagine he sees that and he's like, holy fuck, dude. Like, what do we do here?
Maybe Sorrentino just sends like another page that's in the same shape.
I think so.
And then just puts the numbers next to him.
I think that's what he does. But like,
because that only makes sense. That's nice.
Yeah. But I got to give credit to him because like, I never feel lost in Sorrentino's pages.
Mm-mm.
Like, I always know where he wants my eye to go, you know?
There was a couple times where, like, when there's, like, an odd-shaped panel, I'm not sure where to go when it comes to reading the correct speech bubble.
Really? Because I find that most of the time, if it's unclear, you can find, like, there's a speech bubble that is, like, laid out on top of the panel and almost, like, overlaps with the previous panel.
Yeah, sometimes so it helps a lot. Yeah, so I just got, like, tripped up because of that, but yeah. I know, like, what I was trying to do was incorrect, you know? Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
It's not like just square panels. We go up, mm-hmm. down, left, right.
Yep. So meanwhile, Dr. Zhu is reading Norton's file, and we find out that Norton has been an orphan since getting amnesia when he was 8. He was found on the streets, so he doesn't remember who his family is, I guess. And he was raised in a Catholic orphanage. And then Dr. Zhu is debating, like, reporting Norton for, like, his weird activity lately. But she takes a shower to think it over, and then she looks at the mirror to see the black barn behind her while looking at herself in the mirror. And then she does, like, a double take and goes back to the mirror, and now she sees, like, a man through the mirror with, like, a mallet coming after her until she, like, breaks the mirror. Mm-hmm. So some weird shit going on there. But this, there's, like, a double-page spread here that is maybe, like, the most bizarre and visually compelling double-page spread that, like, I've ever seen. Because, and, like, I'll post it on Twitter because it's just insane, at TradeWeirdersPod on Twitter. But when, like, when I saw it, not only did my jaw hit, like, the floor, it, like, went through my floor and hit my downstairs neighbor's floor. Because I was like, what the fuck? Because it's, like, this crazy...
It's like an infinity symbol made out of a bunch of cubes, but on all the sides of the cubes are panels of things that are happening.
And telling different stories on each side of the cube. Like, each side of the cubes in this infinity sign have their own continuity, and it leads to Dr. Zhu, like, breaking the glass. So there's just, like, some insane trippy shit going on.
Yeah, and then when she breaks the glass, the cubes start to, like,
break apart. And I'm like, this is so creative.
Oh, yeah, killer. I'd be like... Fuck, if I had to, like, do that.
Yeah. Well, like, I think that this is just Sorrentino being like, I'm just going to do it like this. Like, I can't imagine Jeff Lemire was like, okay, let's have a bunch of cubes, and we'll put them kind of like in an infinity symbol, and then each one will have their own panels. Like,
I feel like this double page spread just took, like, a week.
It probably did, because technically this is, like, 40 panels on this page. You know, some of them might be pretty small.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm just, like, so interested on, like, how... it got to this, because it's so cool, and I just like it a lot. Like, I'd love to know what their process is like. You know, maybe Jeff Lemire goes into it on, like, his Substack or something.
I bet Sorrentino's just like, let's just fuck around and see what we can do.
He might. You know, Jeff Lemire could just be like, do some trippy Sorrentino shit, and he'll be like, all right. So it's really cool. So Dr. Zhu goes to see Norton, not really knowing what to do about all the things that she's seeing. And then, meanwhile, Father Fred and the sheriff show up to the crime scene that was called in, and they find that their deputy, Deputy Ballard, also the one that was part of the plowman group with Doc and Father Tom, he was murdered, and he was hung, like, kind of over the killer, which is Joe Reddy, who had previously invited Father Fred over to his house. So, some crazy shit going on. Also, I don't know if you saw this either, but when Dr. Zhu goes to talk to Norton and she's like, I'm scared, I don't know what's going on. This panel where they're like, hold hands briefly, do you see like a skull?
Yeah, it's definitely a skull.
How fucking awesome is that?
You know, I didn't realize that until I just like flipped past it. I'm like, oh, that's a skull. That's cool. But yeah, that's really dope.
Like, who thinks of that? It's crazy. I'm just constantly amazed. But yeah.
And so, well, yeah, they go to Joe's house and then... Deputy Ballard was murdered.
Poor guy. But
he was killed with, like, a mallet.
And that was... I think Dr. Zhu sees Joe Reddy in, like, the vision.
I think so.
Because in that double-page spread, there's also a mallet
right
in there. So
it can't just be a coincidence.
No. Yeah, it can't just be, like, Sorrentino running out of weapons
right
to think about. But, yeah.
Just loves mallets.
So there's, like... That's, like, a cool, like, little detail in there as well. So issue 5... The sheriff tries to detain Joe Reddy, but he gets away after throwing his mallet and hits her in the shoulder, which would hurt like a bitch.
Oh, yeah, dude.
And then he stabs Father Fred's hand to the wall, which would also hurt like a bitch. And then they chase after him. And then when they leave, they find his wife bleeding out. And then they follow Joe Reddy's tracks, which lead to a cornfield that has part of it flattened in like a rectangular shape, which is supposed to be like the plot of like the black barn.
Yeah,
it's so like I guess when it shows up in whatever spiritual realm or whatever, it like when it's physically there, it like flattens out the cornfield,
right?
So you know the black barn has been there.
And then you find like the knife. They find the knife that he was stabbed with.
Yeah, and so the sheriff decides to talk to Doc Sutton, and when they do, we find out that the sheriff and Doc Sutton are father and daughter. And we realize that Doc Sutton got into all of this black barn stuff in the first place because his son disappeared at a young age after having a nightmare that he had about the black barn, and then just disappeared one day. And then the sheriff...
The sheriff's name is Clara.
Clara, yeah.
And she is the daughter of Doc Sutton.
Yeah, and the sheriff still doesn't believe, like, the black barn stuff, and then just, like, leaves out of frustration.
Apparently, Sutton found a drawing of, like, the barn in her brother's room.
Yeah.
The day after he disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
And I love the reveal that the sheriff, who's... Or Clara, who's a woman that couldn't be further away from believing in, like, the black barn, and Doc Sutton, who's, like, pioneering, like, this fight against the black barn,
yeah,
are, like, father and daughter. Like, they couldn't be more opposite on, like, their opinions of the black barn.
Right.
But they're father and daughter. I was like, that's pretty cool. So, then back with Dr. Zhu and Norton, they're talking about when Norton, like, first saw the black barn in his dreams when he was five, and how he sees it, like, all as, like, a higher purpose for himself to, like, fix him once he, like, figures it out. And then Dr. Zhu brings up hypnotism to try and help him discover more about his childhood that he can't remember. So then we go into, like, this trippy hypnotism sequence where he's plunged into this, like, very crazy world of, like, self-discovery, where he goes back to before what he can normally remember, and it's there that he finds the door to the black barn and its opening, basically. So this, like, weird hypnosis sequence, and, like, how Sorrentino changes, like, his whole style to, like, fit what the sequence is doing is insane.
Definitely.
Because it looks more like... It reminds me of, like, another artist. Like, you can still tell it's Sorrentino, but when he changes his style, like, it reminds me of another artist. I think it might be, like, Mobius or something.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
It, like, is phenomenal still. And the fact that he just, like, has that range where, like, he has his, like, normal style and can just change it to something like this and still be incredible. And then there's that page where he's, like, figuring it out, and, like, there's just, like, multiple Nortons that are, like, blended into each other with the city in it. It's just, it's crazy.
Killer. Yeah. This shit, like, we just cannot describe.
Yeah. It really isn't. Like, this is definitely a book to read for, like, its visuals and shit like that, and just seeing how crazy this artist can get.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of, like, really cool strategies that he uses. Like, when he's in this, like, hypnotism world or whatever, the coloring changes, like, ever so slightly as well. Like, it's not as deeply shaded, I feel
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I really appreciate that.
Yeah. So there's a lot of really cool, like, tactics that he uses to really create that distinction. But as Norton sees, like, the barn doors opening, Father Fred hears, like, a gunshot in the direction that Sheriff Clara left in. So when he goes to chase after it, he sees the black barn and a mysterious figure taking Sheriff Clara into it. So Father Fred runs into the black barn to go after her. So killer cliffhanger there.
Uh-oh.
He's running in. He's going to figure out what's in there. So then we build up to issue 6, the final issue of this trade. So Dr. Zhu and Norton go to the place that he describes in, like, his hypnosis thing, and they find, like, a developed part of the city, but there's one empty lot, which is what Norton was kind of describing, and in that lot are pieces of wood that Norton arranges into, like, a big barn-shaped rectangle, and he says that he knows what he has to do now. And so you're like, oh man. And then so we get to Father Fred getting into the black barn, and there's a lot of shit that happens, so I'm just gonna go over all of it right now.
Yeah, I wrote, like, let Nathan explain this.
Yeah. So Father Fred runs in after the Sheriff Clara, and the barn door is, like, shut behind him. And in the barn, he's taken to, like, another physical state of some kind. And he's, like, walking around, like, a trippy and almost, like, hallucinogenic world. And he's, like, accused of having secrets by random people in here. And is, like, he's, like, talking to some girl from his past. And then he sees Joe Reddy shooting Sheriff Clara, and Father Fred tackles him. But when he tackles him into, like, a space void where he confronts Jesus.
Right.
And then he has to choose between getting all the answers of the barn or saving Sheriff Clara. And so he chooses to save Clara by picking up a little teddy bear. But then he gets into another fight with Joe Reddy, who was like, you should have picked the answers. Like, I need you for the answers of the black barn or whatever.
Because they only tell him the answers for some reason.
Yeah. Jesus or whoever is supposed to be telling the answers will only tell it to Father Fred. So they fight, and Father Fred shoots Joe and saves Clara, delivering her to her father to like patch her up. But the whole scene is unlike anything anybody could probably describe, and is there's a lot of really interesting things that they do in the sequence.
Yeah, definitely.
So
speaking of Jesus, I should have mentioned this back in like issue one or two.
Mm-hmm.
But when they find like Father Tom's like body in the river, like Clara comes up to him and she's like, "Jesus," and then the dude next to her is like, "Not quite."
Oh, I love that.
But close. It's Father Tom.
Yeah, I love that. close enough.
You know? Not exactly.
You got the spirit. Yeah, but this whole like scene with Father Fred in the Black Barn is like the trip of a lifetime. Like,
yeah, he trips balls basically.
Yeah,
and then he has
even like, Jesus was like, "You don't believe in me anymore."
And yeah,
because of like what you've experienced,
Jesus is kind of dick in this.
And I'm like, holy fuck! But
he also like gets put into like a past experience with the fling that he had,
but
at once that he's not supposed to have.
But I love the page before that where he's jumping from literally the previous page into the next page.
Oh, which that's is the cool. Fling I didn't see that.
Yeah, and he's like, because someone's like accusing him of having secrets or whatever, and so he like tries to leave that environment. But then he jumps into the next page, which is him having that fling. And I'm like, what the fuck, dude? Like, he literally jumps from one scene to another, and you see it happen on the page.
Yeah. And then the floor of, like, what he's jumping into is the next page.
Yeah, exactly.
So sick.
It's amazing.
And then you see the previous page where, like, fucking Norton is, like, tripping, or he's, like, being hypnotized.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And, like, it just... Also, it makes me wonder who this Rebecca person is.
I hope this page was like the easiest to make for Andrew. He just like, you know, just clipped it and then like just put it right there.
You know, just like turned it a little bit, made it red.
Let's make this page a bunch of other pages.
I hope so. I also really like this page with Long Fred when he tackles Joe Reddy into like space.
Gets all stretched out.
Yeah. I hope that one was easy for him too.
What is that?
It demonstrates a lot.
He looks like a little Stretch Armstrong.
Yeah. Really, in Photoshop, he probably just like clicked on him and then took the little box and just stretched it out a little bit more.
He probably drew that.
He probably did, yeah.
Anyway.
But like the whole thing is like a trip, and it's worth it just by issue 6 alone just to see what's going on, even if you don't know the story. Like,
yeah, just to like look at it.
It's incredible.
It's definitely like one of the most unique visual books like I've ever read.
For sure. I'm excited what their next thing is, because they're going to announce that on like Halloween or something.
Yeah, on Sunday.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, Clara's okay, and she's all patched up. What I do find interesting is that he brings the teddy bear with him, like, into normal existence.
Yeah.
Because he picks up the teddy bear after Jesus is like, "You need to pick." And then that teddy bear comes with him. But, yeah, after Clara is stable in the hospital, Father Fred finds out that Clara remembers the whole thing happening like completely differently than Father Fred. Like, she thinks the whole thing happened in a forest and there's like no barn or anything. Mm-hmm. And she thinks that Joe Reddy just like got the jump on her, but she is convinced that her missing brother Daniel is still alive and out there.
I'm right here.
Yeah, you're right here.
Come find me.
Having a podcast.
Yeah. About this book. How trippy. Damn.
I know. They knew.
What if that's in the last issue? It's just like...
Just you?
Daniel's podcasting about the book that he came from.
Dude, this is so meta.
Wow.
Jeff Lemire planned this all along.
Wow.
So Father Fred gets another call from the bishop dude who's like, "You're good there, so you can stay there," kind of deal.
He might know about the barn. He hasn't like...
I assume he does.
He's like, "You're right where you need to be," kind of thing.
You're doing...
He didn't say he knows about the barn.
But he's like,
he probably does.
You're doing the work they need to be doing. So,
right.
And then to end it, Norton is like, "Let's take all my shit and move it here. And let's build our own barn."
Yeah.
And that's how it ends. So this is the first 6 of 27 issues. So there's a lot that they've built up here, but these are definitely, you know, trade books. I feel like they read very, very well in trade.
Yeah, I'd say if you had a couple hours, you just shotgun the whole thing, and it's definitely not...
That would be pretty awesome.
It's honestly not a boring book by any means. Like,
no.
I remember shotgunning like 8 of them in a row. I'm like, this book's so fucking good.
Yeah, it is. It's incredible.
And it's just like, I just have to like put the time for it, you know?
Yeah.
It is good. I do want to see like how it wraps up.
Totally binge-worthy, though. Also, there's a couple moments in this book where Norton takes off like his mask, and it like feels like a big moment for some reason. Like at the very end here, he like takes off his mask and it just like, it feels like it humanizes him a little bit.
Yeah. Or maybe it's like him.
It's very symbolic.
Feeling more comfortable about either the situation or with like Dr. Zhu.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Good stuff. So we'll go into Back Matter Matters.
Back Matter Matters.
And this is a segment where we either have 100 pages of back matter or 3 pages of back matter. And this is one of the cases where we only have 3 pages of back matter.
But it's one of our favorite things, and it's some variant covers.
Yep, some variants. So we get a good Jock one. You know, Jock's always doing a good horror cover.
This one's badass.
Yeah.
I wish I have it.
I like it a lot. I think I have a few of these variant covers because I think I collected Gideon up to like 12 to 15-ish range.
Okay.
So I definitely have this Norton Jeff Lemire variant, I want to say, for the first issue.
Yeah.
But we see a bunch of other cool ones from Cliff Chang. I believe I actually have that variant as well. I got most of these variants actually, because there's a Greg Smallwood one for issue 3, and I definitely have that one.
I like this. Who's this? Tom
Wallen.
Wallen. He's cool.
Yeah. It's very stylistic. It looks like a movie poster or something.
This Greg Smallwood one is terrifying.
Yeah. It's awesome. Good focus on the Black Barn. We got Dustin Nguyen as well, a famous collaborator with Jeff Lemire. Scotty Young does one as well. And that big smile I didn't like, he makes it even bigger. It goes off of his face.
Yeah, it's definitely a different kind of style.
Yeah.
That we're not used to from Scotty Young.
Yeah, it's not like a cute like baby cover.
Yeah,
it's a exactly. Deeply horrifying, detailed cover.
Yeah, the Dustin Nguyen one is awesome too.
Yeah, and then we get another Jeff Lemire cover.
I like how he just has like all these homie artists. He's like
some of the most.
If they're incredible. Not on the book, they're doing a variant. You know,
yeah, like yeah,
and everything around that.
He's got his frequent collaborators on there.
Yeah,
so yeah, that's Dustin awesome. Nguyen, of course.
I just followed Tom Whalen. He's awesome.
Yeah, because he did Moon Knight with Greg Smallwood.
Oh right.
Yeah, so I assume that's how he knows him here. I don't know if he's done anything with Cliff Chang. But he's definitely a great artist. Has he done anything with Jock? Oh, Snow Angels.
Yeah, dumbass.
But that was before. Snow Angels is after this.
Right.
So, but they've probably done something
who
before.
Who knows when he wrote it, though? You know? Yeah. He's always like, I had this idea in like 2012.
I've had this idea for 10 years. Actually, it's been done for 10 years.
When I was born, this is the only idea I had. And now it's coming to
print. I wrote this in the womb of my mother. So, yeah, love a good Jeff Lemire.
Definitely.
And this is definitely an incredible one. Is this like the longest book he's done? No, Sweet Tooth is.
I think Sweet Tooth is like 40-something.
But we typically don't see him do like long-form series like this. So it's cool that he got such like a premium like artist like Andrea Sorrentino to do like that long of a run.
Because
he doesn't slow down at all.
I'm sure that there were like hiatuses and whatnot between arcs.
I think there was because they also did like the Batman Black Label thing and the Joker Black Label thing.
Yeah, but like with this, like it's so worth it to have him on it for every single issue, and that's what I love is just like consistent team on this.
Yeah, I really appreciate that as well.
Even if like it's got to be delayed for like a month, I probably haven't even caught up with it.
Yeah, exactly.
But now it's all done.
Just put it out and people will read it. You know.
Exactly. Eventually.
They'll read it on their podcast.
Yeah, no, I can't. I can't wait for the ultimate, the compendium. That'd be cool
with all 27 issues.
The omnibus. Yeah, that's easy. They have a couple of deluxes out right now. I'm not sure when it comes out, but I know it's coming.
I wonder why 27. Do you think they were like, let's shoot for 25, and then Jeff Lemire was like, I got to tell a couple more issues.
I don't know. I think I'd prefer it to be like exactly what it needs to be rather than him trying to hit some sort of goal.
Yeah, that's fair. He probably did approach it that way.
Because like if you had to shave it down to 25, that might have like hurt it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if he tried to expand it to like 30, that could have made like some of them kind of boring. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So whatever it needs to be, I'm all for it.
They got a quote from Brian Michael Bendis on the back of this book.
Really? Wow.
And he's basically just saying that Lemire and Sorrentino is one of the greatest comic teams of all time, which I totally agree with.
There was a quote from Mark Miller.
On here?
Yeah, it's on the cover.
Oh, cool.
Let's see here. My personal pick as the best comic of 2018.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, 2018.
Yeah, this one, we didn't say that this volume was called The Black Barn, but...
that is a pretty central focus of this.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of that.
Is every trade called The Black Barn? Because I feel like The Black Barn was definitely very prevalent.
The second volume is called The Bigger Blacker Barn.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Sounds dirty.
Yeah.
So, with that, we'll go into our next segment.
The Pull List.
: Shove It In Your Box.
The Pull List, The Pull List. What did you shove in your box?
So, what have you been shoving in your box lately?
We just had a couple things today.
Yeah, what'd you pick up this week?
So we got the House of Slaughter, number one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you get the shiny cover?
I didn't pick it up.
Really?
I saw it there and I was like, I haven't read all of Something is Killing the Children, which is on like issue 20 right now. I thought it was in like...
Is it really?
Yeah. I was like, holy fuck.
Because I know it has like 3 volumes, so that makes sense.
Yeah. But
I think this...
I probably should have picked it up, honestly.
Since we know what the House of Slaughter is... I think we could probably just read it and it would make sense.
Yeah.
But I got it anyway, and the shop got like a ton of them. Like there was like really expensive like variants too that were like $12. I'm like, no, thank you. But
yeah, I don't know. See the shiny one?
I did not. Oh yeah, I did actually. It's like a foil cover, right?
Yeah, yeah. I got that. It's cool.
That's awesome.
So I got House of Slaughter. I got Task Force Z.
I sure did. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, we'll see what that's about. Got Black Hammer Reborn, number 5.
Of course.
Love that book. And then we got... You think it might be Jonah in the Impossible Monsters?
Could be.
Because Jonah is like a dude name. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
We got to ask. Jonah 7. That's what I got. I didn't have 5 or 6 either, so I picked all those up.
Oh, I didn't see 7.
They were like hiding. It was in like a different shelf.
I went to the new comic shop that's by me now that I've moved.
Uh-huh. How'd
and
that go?
I noticed that I missed 2. Which came out this week.
I'm missing 7. If you see 7, get it for me.
Okay, I will. But they didn't have Chew there. And then I'm now realizing that they didn't have Jonna either.
Yeah, I think just with those, like, maybe if it's like a shop that's like not that developed yet.
I think that they mainly do Big 2 stuff. And then big, like, Image stuff. Like, Ant came out today. They had tons of Ant books.
Oh, I saw that, yeah. That seemed odd.
And I'm like, who's really like, yes, more Ant? You know,
is that something that's
it looked like an existing property already?
I think I picked it. I looked at it and it was like the premiere issue or blah, blah, blah. So I think it's like a new property.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, dude, have you seen I don't know if you've seen like the Galactus pop that came out recently.
Yeah, it's insane.
Like the Blacklight one.
Yeah,
dude. Ash Avenue Comics has 4 of them.
Yeah, the comic shop that I went to has like 4 of them as well, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit. I was going to pre-order it because it would have shipped in like January, but they have them already. Yeah. I'm like, how the fuck does that work?
I don't know.
And so it took so much for me not to buy it.
Just get it.
You know, I just like, I dropped some money on like, you know, an engagement ring. So not everything is fruitful.
Just return that and then.
And then buy all the pops.
Yeah, and then buy... Buy 4 Galactus Blacklight Pops.
They say diamonds are forever, but pops are for life.
Pops will never end.
Pops till you die.
Yeah, exactly. That's crazy.
Anyway, I'll probably buy one from the store rather than whatever else.
So, did you say DC versus Vampires?
No, I didn't get that.
Oh, I got that.
It looked kind of dumb.
It does look kind of dumb, maybe, but it does have Otto Schmidt on it, which is what I'm mainly interested in.
What was he in?
He did Green Arrow Rebirth, and then he did Hawkeye Freefall with Rosenberg already, so they're like a good team.
Okay.
And I follow him on Twitter. He's a good artist.
Wait, didn't Tynion do that? Didn't he write it?
Write what?
That book?
Hawkeye?
No, DC versus Vampires?
Yes. Well, Tynion and Rosenberg like co-wrote.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, just like let me know if it's any good, then I'll like get it.
Yeah.
It's just like I'm all for the horror shit, but I just didn't like.
It's just weird that like both of them released at the same time. Because they feel like they'd be similar concepts, Task Force Z and DC vs. Vampires in like a way. But I think it's just like, well, maybe not. Like,
because it's like zombie characters.
And then vampires.
It's not like Superman turns into a vampire.
Yeah. So
Unless it is.
I'm going to try and read both of those issues like this week and see what I really want to continue with.
Okay.
But yeah, I picked up both of those. And then I picked up a book from Vault called Dead Box, number 1.
Okay.
It's from Mark Russell.
Oh, is it like on like number 3 right now?
It's on number 1.
Oh.
And I don't know what it's about. I just picked it up, so I'm gonna see. Love which Mark I Russell. Told myself I was gonna stop doing because I have so many things I'm behind on. But oh, yeah. The cover alone just interested me.
I looked up Dead Box and the coffin came up.
You mean a coffin?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Oh,
it doesn't show up on the stupid app, but
okay.
Let me see if I can find.
Oh, Not All Robots. That's what I saw.
Oh, I have the number one of that as well.
Okay. I think it's on number three now. I just saw it. I'm like, I like that guy, and that's an interesting.
Not All Robots is on number three?
I think so.
I think you're right.
I'd be wrong.
This is the cover I picked up for Dead Box, and I'm like, all right, I'm sold.
It's not enough for me.
So,
in the year 2056, robots have replaced human beings in the workforce. It's about time. An uneasy coexistence develops between the newly intelligent robots and the 10 billion humans living on Earth. Every human family has assigned a robot upon whom they are completely reliant. What could possibly go wrong? That's a cool premise.
Yeah, it's kind of like iRobot.
Yeah.
But anyway, did you read anything this week?
I sure did, Nathan.
What'd you read?
Did you read Clear?
No, I have it downloaded, though.
It's good.
Same thing with Night of the Ghouls or whatever.
I read that as well.
Which one do you like more? Is it easy to compare them?
They're very different.
Okay.
Clear is more of like a murder mystery kind of thing.
Sure.
And so I'm really interested in that. And the art is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, I was about to say, is it like very visually
insane? Yeah.
Okay. It's yes, like, dude. I love
like,
in a pool.
It's like it's eye porn. Anyway, Night of the Ghoul. It's the Francesco Francavilla that we know and love.
Good.
I just love.
He did a Star Wars book. Did you know that?
No fucking way. Like a run?
Yeah, like currently going, or at least.
What's it called?
It's like Star Wars something, Darth Vader Adventures something.
Oh, like the IDW ones?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I'd buy that just for him.
Yeah. Like he does the interiors. I just found that out.
I don't see him enough and I want more.
Yeah. I'll figure out what the name of it is. Maybe we can do a Star Wars trade.
Yeah. I almost impulsively bought Afterlife with Archie because they had a copy of it at the shop.
Yeah.
I'm like, I just read this, but I love it and I just want a copy of it.
It's the Star Wars Adventures line, but the title of the book is called Ghosts of Vader's Castle.
Oh, okay.
Or Tales from Vader's
Castle. I think he can only do horror, maybe. Like, he definitely do other things with different colors.
They're like, IDW's like, do you want to do Star Wars? And he's like, can it be scary Star Wars? And they're like, fine.
No, Vader's Castle is cool. Did I tell you that I watched that horror Lego Star Wars thing?
Yeah, no, you didn't.
Yeah, it was fine.
I'm sure it was.
There's some funny parts to it.
Yeah.
But anyway, cool. Night of the Ghoul, it's cool. I like that. I thought it was a different concept that he's doing, but I still liked it.
What was it?
So it was the one where he finds like that movie,
yeah,
like that perfect movie or whatever, and then he goes and like tries to like hunt down what happened because some of it was damaged.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure. I kind of understand what's happening, but yeah, it's good. Cool. These ones are a lot less dense than We Have Demons.
Yeah.
Clear is like a little dense when it starts off, but...
But it's a big concept.
Night of the Ghoul goes like straight into it, which is cool.
Hell yeah.
I also read The All-Nighter.
I know. Issue 1 and 2 came out.
1 and 2.
And I have it downloaded as well. I plan on reading that very, very soon. I've been so excited for that ever since you told me about
it. It's just as good as you thought it would be.
Oh.
And I'm stoked on it. I like it a lot. God. It's introduced more than I thought it would.
Sweet.
But that's like a good thing, you know, and it looks great. Art's incredible.
Good. Yeah.
Good story.
A little bit of Jason Liu.
Jason Liu. We love him.
Yeah. I've been super pumped about that.
Did you read anything?
No.
Wow. Did you watch anything?
I've had a busy week, Daniel.
Have you?
Yeah. I moved. I was a best man at a wedding and then I unpacked a lot.
Did you unpack everything?
No. I'm still very buried in boxes right now.
Didn't think so.
So, but I do have something that I played a couple weeks ago and I forgot to mention here, but it's an Xbox game / PC game. It's cross-platform called Back for Blood.
Okay.
And it is, remember Left 4 Dead?
Yeah.
Is that.
Cool.
It's actually so similar to that I thought it was the same studio that made Left 4 Dead, but it's not.
Wow.
It's kind of like a clone of it, but it's like really, really good. And it's just like that same feel. Like Left 4 Dead is like one of the most fun games that you can play like with your friends, because it's just like crazy shit happening in zombies and you gotta like strategize how you go through the level and whatnot.
Sure.
And you get overwhelmed very easily, and it's definitely that. Like, it's got the same feel and everything, and I totally recommend it. Huh. It's on Game Pass if anybody has that.
Okay.
I recommend getting that. I don't work for Microsoft anymore, but I still do like that product.
I watched a lot of streams like this week. Just like streams of people playing video games, you know?
Twitch streams?
Yeah, Twitch streams. Thank you. This guy was playing Fears of Fathom Home Alone, and you're just like in like a house and someone's trying to break in.
Oh,
it's
really?
It's like a horror game. It's fucking freaky.
That's awesome.
Because like, you see shit, you see like people in the windows and shit. I'm like, I don't fuck with this. It was just like seeing them be like as scared as I feel is like what was like really funny about it.
That's awesome.
And then have you heard of Poppy Playtime?
Yes.
That shit's freaky too.
Because
it's so like
I haven't like watched the actual gameplay of it, but it seems like every other game that where you have to like there's a thing coming after you and you just gotta run away from it and escape.
Yeah, it's basically that.
Yeah.
But it's still like funny to watch people play, and like they're moving so fast and it's like really hard to tell like
where
is a good place to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how they decide that, but
that's cool.
That was kind of funny.
That's cool. Watching some Twitch streams.
Did you ever play Cold War?
Call of Duty?
Yeah.
No.
So they have a game type in there. It's called Prop Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
That shit's hilarious.
Very familiar with Prop Hunt.
It's so fucking funny. Do they have that in other ones, or have you just seen it?
That's been a concept for a game ever since like Garry's Mod, which is like a very, very old computer game. But yeah, you like take the form of an object and you hide in like a map, and people have to try and figure out what is like a player object and which is like is normally supposed to be there. But yeah, it is very entertaining to watch, because when you get found out, you're just like a little couch or like a little like a little basket or something, like running away.
Like, you didn't see me.
Yeah. This shit's good.
Yeah, I watched that. That's funny too. I watched Dune.
Dune. What is that movie again?
It's like this indie movie. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Yeah.
It's got some like little actors.
Who's the director?
Denis Villeneuve or something like that. Villeneuve.
I haven't heard of that guy.
Yeah, very underground stuff. Only like,
are there any notable actors in that movie?
Probably none you've never heard of.
Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet. Oscar Isaac.
Nope, never seen him in anything.
You probably know Jason Momoa or like Zendaya.
Zendaya. Doesn't ring a bell.
Is she in that
movie with Zac Efron?
Probably.
About the circus?
About the... Oh, yeah, huh?
Yeah, she was in that one.
Last Showman.
Anyway, how was it? I really want to watch it.
It was great, but it pissed me off.
Sweet.
Like, visually fantastic. Conceptually fantastic. Plot was great.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a spoiler or anything, but it's, when you turn it on, it says Dune and then Part 1.
Yeah.
Meaning it's, like, going to be, like, there's going to be a sequel, or it's going to be, like, a trilogy or something like that.
Sure.
And they made it to be just a Part 1, and it feels just like a Part 1, because when it feels like it's starting to like get moving, it just ends.
Is the next one
fucking pissed me off? It was so dumb. And the next one comes out 2 years from now.
Is it going to be called Tune?
Perhaps.
I hope so. I mean, as long as it's good, like.
But like, it didn't feel like a whole like project. Like, if this, second one like didn't get greenlit, then this would not be a good movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just feels like a really great Part 1, but like, I don't consider that like a great movie.
Which, that's totally fair.
Like, it would be only good if I saw like the rest of it and thought about it as like a whole.
Yeah.
Because like, a trilogy is fine, but this is like just a Part 1. You know what I mean? It's like, there's so many things left off the table.
Yeah, it's always shitty to start off a franchise like that, you know?
Because, like, even though it's, like, a 2.5-hour movie...
Holy shit.
It's a 2.5-hour movie. I was still waiting for more when it ended. Like, when it ended, I'm like, oh, that's it? You know what I mean? So, the pacing was good in that sense, but...
Yeah, I'll probably still watch it.
It was basically, like, a 3-hour trailer for, like, the next movie.
Love that. That's great. Did you watch it on, like, HBO Max?
Yeah, because I haven't really made time to go to the movies or anything.
Yeah, same.
And if I would, I should probably see, like, Venom.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Do you want to see that eventually?
Yeah, we should probably go see that.
Yeah, we'll just talk about it.
We read the book.
Yeah, we read the
book. So we should probably see it.
Did you watch anything else?
No.
Okay.
I don't even have my TV plugged in right now. So
anyway, I watched a horror movie called Trick or Treat. Have you ever heard of that?
Is it set in Halloween?
It's set during on Halloween? Yes.
Oh, okay. I've not heard of that.
Just take a look at this guy. He's like the character in it. His name's Sam. Oh shit, that's like the little guy in it.
Oh yeah. Okay. That.
Pretty good. It has 85% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I'm like, no horror movie has 85% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really? I guess I don't pay attention that much to it.
Yeah, like, well, I guess you don't watch as many, so I'll just kind of like tell you mostly what happens. I won't like spoil it, but the first 45 minutes, I'm like, this movie sucks. I don't like it. I'm wasting time. It was only like an hour and a half, but like when it got to like the 45 minute mark, I'm like, what the fuck? Because like, just like the biggest twist happened, and I was like,
neat.
Okay. And it's kind of like an anthology, but like Sam, like that villain dude, is like a part of all of them, and they're all like in the same town on the same night kind of thing.
Huh. So it's like a silver coin.
Yeah.
If you have,
if they're all in the same night and in the same city.
Okay. Interesting.
So yeah, it was like they had like comic captions, which are cool. Like it said like earlier, and then it looked like it was from a comic book.
Oh, cool.
So I kind of appreciated that. And so basically the people that die in it, like didn't follow like the rules of Halloween. Like okay. Someone like was
like, they didn't say trick or treat or something at the door or,
no, well, like you would think, but someone like was putting like poison in like the candy.
Oh yeah, that's against the rules.
Yeah, against the rules. And he got killed. And then someone like wasn't answering the door when people like came up.
Hmm.
Someone like blew out a jack-o'-lantern before like the end of the night.
Gotcha.
Which is like a rule, I guess. And so those people just get murdered for no reason. And so. It was super interesting. I don't know if it was like 85%. Like I don't know if it was like 85% Rotten Tomatoes, but I definitely thought it was like worth the time.
Gotcha.
And that little dude's creepy as fuck.
Yeah,
he like crawls like on it. The ceilings and shit.
Oh no, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, and he sounds like a kid. Like he like laughs as a kid. I'm like, fuck that.
Oh, gross.
But yeah, it wasn't really that scary, but I enjoyed it.
Nice.
Last thing, I found this YouTube video. This YouTube channel. It's called Tell It Animated.
Okay.
And they have these videos where they're showing like the evolutions of characters. So I watched like all of like the slasher characters, because I'm not going to watch like all of Friday the 13th.
Right.
But they show like he draws and animates like all these characters and then tells you basically what happens in each movie in like a sentence, like how they died or whatever and like what they did basically. And then he tells you like the subtle changes that they made to the costumes and stuff like that. And then he kind of explained like how everything was like erased with like reboots and stuff like that.
Interesting.
And it was just like a really, and they're only like 3 minutes.
So they like explain the continuity of a character.
Yeah. Cause okay. I've seen like one Nightmare on Elm Street and I don't really plan on watching the rest of them. So that's just cool to see like what they changed. I'm like, oh, that sounds dumb. And then he just kind of tells me what happens and now I don't have to watch it. So that was really fun.
That's cool.
Yeah, for sure.
That's an interesting premise.
Yeah, they're cool. And he does like other ones like Terminator and
nice
RoboCop, things like that. So yeah, fun little channel I found.
That's cool.
But that's all you read and watched, because I guess nothing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess I watched a couple different YouTube channels just like throughout the week randomly, but since I've been getting a little bit more into esports, I found this YouTube channel called The Score Esports. And okay. It's basically like ESPN for esports, but they have like different videos that are categorized, like the top 10 times people choked, or like or like nice. The top 10 time, like top 10 rivalries and like things like that.
Okay.
That are just like, they go into esports history, and there's like a lot of really interesting things that like happen.
No
as
shit.
Far as like rivalries or like, you know, people coming back, you know, when they're down like 13 rounds in Counter-Strike or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do like almost like these video essays on like certain players. So wow. There are people that I'm watching that are playing Valorant right now and really good at it, but you see like the struggle that they go through with like previous games, since Valorant's only like 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
There's like players that were, you know, that were first in like Overwatch or something, and like you kind of see like how long they've been at it and how long it took them to get where they are now and like the level of fame, you know.
Yeah,
so it's very interesting to see like the level of work that goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
and just sort of like the grind. And so it's really cool seeing, knowing people's history through that. And these people do like really interesting video essays.
So do they have like a musty of Valorant basically, or not really?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. Like, there's definitely like a lot of, I think, big names on Valorant, but like the one that I specifically watched, it's this guy named Hiko. He plays for 100 Thieves, and it just like goes into the history of him on like Counter-Strike, and he's like never won like a world championship, but he was basically responsible for like getting North American like esports teams into like big Counter-Strike tournaments, and like how long he would do it. And then he like lost 100 pounds, like, and he like bikes 30 miles or whatever every day. And goddamn. He was responsible for like putting together like the 100 Thieves team basically. And so there's just like a lot of really interesting things like that that you wouldn't know just like watching them normally. And then it goes into just like how they like stream and stuff like that. So he's like the biggest streamer on Valorant right now. He like typically has like over like 15,000 viewers whenever he plays.
That's insane.
Yeah. And he's like super old. He's like one of the oldest. I mean, he's like super old when it comes to like video game sports.
Uh-huh.
He's like 31 or 32 right now.
So not even that old.
So not even like that old, but like there's a lot of pro players in like normal esports, like Rocket League and stuff like that, that are like 15.
Yeah. Know?
So he's like double that, but he's still like doing these incredible plays.
That's cool. Can you imagine just like doing something like that and someone just makes a little documentary about you?
Yeah. Yeah. But that channel like really highlights a lot of like interesting things, and just like the fuck up one is like really funny.
Uh-huh.
But like there's a rivalry one that's really interesting, and there is a rivalry between two people in like a fighting game, and mm-hmm. somebody called out another one on Twitter to like to do a first to 10 in Mortal Kombat, because he said that he could like totally crush him. And then the other guy beats him 10-0, and then he challenges him again, but to have the first guy play a different player, and then it's just like a first to 3, and then he loses all three of those.
Oh.
So in a first to 10, he lost 13 rounds basically. And like that's like his legacy now. Because he used to be like the top like fighting game player of all time basically at some point. And then he challenges this dude and loses 13 games in a row. So there's like things like that that are on there that I'm like, oh man, that would have been so hype at the time, you know?
I like never talk shit playing video games because I'm not that good at anything.
I know.
And I just know someone could just like wipe the floor with me.
Yeah, I know. But there's like really interesting moments like that in esports that I never would have known about.
Right. So, that's cool.
The Score Esports is what it is. They have some pretty good videos.
Nice. Well, anyway.
So, yeah, that's everything.
Is that the episode?
That is the episode.
What are we reading next week, Nathan?
Next week, we're going to read Dead Dogs Bite by Tyler Boss. He wrote and drew that book, and the hardcover just came out. But he's also about to start What's the Furthest Place from Here?
Oh, yes.
At Image with Matthew Rosenberg.
Mm-hmm.
So very excited about that. So we're going to be reading that next week.
And what was the big one we read?
Four Kids Walk Into a Bank.
Correct.
So okay. We've read that before. So the same team on that is going to start What's the Furthest Place from Here pretty soon.
Yeah, very excited for that.
Yeah, very excited.
Cool, cool.
So that's the episode for this week. If you've listened thus far, thanks.
Thank you.
Shout out to you. If you want to follow us on Twitter or send us a little message, you can either email us at tradewaiterspod@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at tradewaiterspod. If you want to see Michael Walsh, you know, comment on a little tweet that we have. yeah, at tradewaiterspod on Twitter, and I'm at more like Nate Thick on Twitter.
Dan Natividad on Twitter.
And we're also on TikTok.
Indeed, at tradewaiters.
Yes, we are.
The one and only.
Yeah. We didn't even need to add any extra bullshit at the end. They just had tradewaiters available.
Yeah, not tradewaiterspod or podcast.
Yeah. So give us a little follow.
Take a look at the content.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Yeah.
Peace.
Goodbye.